Welcome to Journal of a Medical Intuitive. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Lisa Vest. This is episode 8 on May 10th, 2020. Our topic is the science behind my coronavirus information. What I wanted to talk about today is whether or not there's scientific evidence that supports the guidance that I've been receiving from my guides about the coronavirus. I've delivered information in episodes 4, 5, 6, and 7 about this virus and this pandemic. And a lot of it was predictive, and so some of it we may not know whether or not it's accurate for some time. But some of it does appear to be supported by some information that has come out since I've uploaded those podcasts. And so I'm going to go over some of that information today. So in my first podcast on the coronavirus, which was in late March, was based on a download I got on March 20th, 2020. And so I want to go over a couple of claims from that episode that I've since researched and found some science to back up. So one of the things that I said in March was that there would be no immunity once you got the coronavirus. So typically people expect to develop some immunity after they recover from a viral infection. And, you know, scientists really don't know the answer to this yet, so there's been a lot of questioning about this. However, WHO, the World Health Organization, on May 1st, did put out a report saying that there's no evidence that COVID-19 survivors cannot be reinfected. And so they, you know, studies have been done, and so far there's just no evidence that you cannot be reinfected. There's no evidence that you develop antibodies that protect you from a second infection. So this was from the Oncology Nurse Advisor, and it was also shared on CBS News, but it was originating from the World Health Organization on May 1st. And so we don't know yet about that. You know, there are people who are trying to develop, who are talking about using plasma from patients who've recovered from coronavirus to give to those who are sick in the hopes that the antibodies in their blood will help to help the other person to recover. But there's just no evidence that those antibodies are being created in a way that's protective. So we don't know yet about that, but so then let's see, I also said back in March that the second time you get this, not only will you not develop immunity, but that you'll be able to get it again, and that when you get it again, it'll be worse. And so there was an article in the Jules Quarterly in Taiwan on February 14th, based on research done by Chinese doctors, saying that instead of creating immunity, the virus can reportedly reinfect an individual and hasten fatal heart attack. Now, there was another article coming out of South Korea, which was published in Reuters, and it was, according to Reuters World News, on April 10th, 2020, South Korea reports recovered coronavirus patients testing positive again. So patients were testing positive after previously testing negative. So they reported 91 patients who they thought were cleared, then tested positive again. Now, the possibility with that study, you know, people have said that maybe it wasn't a case of them being reinfected, but maybe the virus was in remission and then it was reactivated rather than being reinfected. Another theory that's come out about that study is maybe the tests were not good. Maybe those tests that said they were negative were just not good tests. There's another article in the LA Times on May 5th. Scientists have identified a new strain of coronavirus that has become dominant worldwide and appears to be more contagious than the versions that spread in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, according to a new study led by scientists at Los Alamos National Library. laboratory. So Los Alamos National Laboratory did a study, and they identified a new strain that's more contagious. So they said the new strain appeared in February in Europe, migrated quickly to the east coast of the United States, and has been the dominant strain across the world since mid-March. In addition to spreading faster, they say that it may make people vulnerable to a second infection after a first bout with the disease. So that report does support what I said in my podcast in March. And so we have a couple of different reports coming out. And, a lot of reports that are coming out now by scientists, this preliminary research, there hasn't been enough time for a lot of research to be done on these topics. And so, we have to take all of this scientific data as preliminary. And, really, some of it even isn't peer reviewed yet. Some of these reports coming out are pre-peer review. That one was not. But even if they are peer reviewed or this early on, there could be new studies coming out tomorrow that refutes this. But I just wanted to report some of the studies that are coming out that are supporting the guidance that I'm getting from Spirit. I'm a medical intuitive, and as a medical intuitive, I work with intuition and science. I work with rational and intuitive sources of knowledge. And so I don't believe that we should just listen to whatever we get intuitively and just take it as the gospel truth. And I also don't think we should listen to whatever science says and take it as the gospel truth. But rather that we should combine these two sources of knowledge, that we should combine intuitive knowledge with empirical knowledge and rational knowledge. And so I'm just going through all the guidance I got, looking for studies that either confirm or refute the information I got. And I'm going to continue to do this as time goes on, and I welcome my listeners to put comments, to refute or to criticize or to add evidence to support some of my statements as you listen. You can find the transcripts of my podcast at journalofamedicalintuitive.com. I have transcripts of each podcast in English and also in several other languages. And it's in a blog format, so you can go ahead and comment there if you like. Okay, so let me continue reviewing some of this data. So another thing that I said back in March was that the virus affects the heart, not just the lungs. And so there's a study that came out of Wuhan, and most of the early research is coming out of studies of the Wuhan patients, because that's the largest amount of data that we have. Other patients, they're more recent, so the earliest data we have is coming out of China. So there's a lot of studies coming out of China. And so there was a study coming out of China by Zhang, Ma, and Zhang, and it was published in the National Review of Cardiology. And let's see, that was 2020. I'm not seeing the exact date. But in this study, they found that cardiovascular damage by COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2, they found that the virus appears to infect host cells through ACE2, and that it then causes COVID-19, and then it causes damage to the myocardium, and they weren't really sure how, but they were finding all this cardiovascular damage when they were doing autopsies on the patients who died from COVID-19. Okay, that was published March 5th, 2020 in the National Review of Cardiology. Okay, we also have an article coming out of clinical research. Let's see, this journal is called Diabetes and Metabolic Syndrome Clinical Research and Reviews, Volume 14, Issue 3, May, June 2020. There's an article on cardiovascular disease and COVID-19. And what the authors of this article say is that While respiratory illness is the dominant clinical manifestation of COVID-19, cardiovascular involvement occurs as well. They say it's not as common, but they do see acute cardiac injury in cases. Let's see, it occurs in approximately 8 to 12% of all patients. And so they see direct myocardial injury due to viral involvement. And so that's not a big percentage, right? 8 to 12% of the people who are getting COVID-19 are getting this kind of major cardiovascular damage and or dying from a cardiac event. So, you know, kind of supports what I said, not entirely, because what did my guide said? They said this is an illness that affects the heart. I guess they didn't say it primarily affects the heart, but they did say people think of it as a lung disease, but it actually affects the heart. And so that does support that. Now let's see, in Scientific American, on April 6, 2020, we have another article, Heart Damage in COVID-19 Patients Puzzles Doctors. So in this article, they found that up to 1 in 5 hospitalized patients have signs of heart injury, and they're trying to figure out why. So they don't understand it yet. Why? So we have a little bit of evidence for the information I gave about it affecting the heart. And I guess we'll find out more as time goes on, how much it affects the heart. Now, there are some other things I said which we don't really have any evidence for yet. So, for example, one of the things I said in March was that this virus is going to facilitate a shift and bring harmony to the world. And I don't know if that's happening yet. I do know that there are some unity events happening. I know that in Europe, the European Union is coming together. I know that in the United States, the Western states are forming a collaborative group, and the Midwestern states are also coming together. And also on the East Coast, several states are working together to help each other. And so maybe that's some evidence of harmony, but I think we have to wait and see. Is this virus going to facilitate a shift in consciousness? Is it going to bring harmony to the world? Okay, I also said in that early episode that after the virus ramps down, people will be tempted to return to normal, and then a second wave will come. So that was in, you know, third week of March that I said that. This is when we were just beginning to do the lockdowns in the United States. And so here we are in May, and May 7th, a lot of states started reopening in the United States, and some are set to reopen in the next few days. We don't know yet if there's a second wave, because in the United States, we're still in our first wave. But we have heard that in South Korea and China, they've both reopened, and they now, as of today, May 10th, are having a new rise in cases after reopening. So is that evidence that what I said is true? We don't know yet. I guess we'll see. Another thing I said back in March was that the best defense against this virus is love. And so is there any evidence for that? I hope so. I haven't found it yet, but if anyone finds evidence of that, I'm sure there probably is some. I am seeing a lot of, I do see a lot of reports of people being loving and kind. Has there been a big, you know, is there a correlation between those people who are being loving and those people who are recovering? I don't know. We got to stay tuned and see. Okay, another thing that I said was that the coronavirus operates by teaming up with other viruses in your body, and so that those people with a greater viral load in their body are more susceptible. I haven't found anything about this that's about COVID-19. I did find one scientific study that was published back in 2019, October 2019, by Greg Wolf. And it's actually about coronaviruses in general, not specifically about COVID-19, but about the whole family of coronaviruses. And so a study was done back in 2017 to 2018. And what they found in this study, they were sampling soldiers in the armed forces, and they found that people who had a large dose of people who had an influenza virus in their blood had a much more severe reaction to coronaviruses. And so they found that those soldiers that had been vaccinated with the flu virus, the flu vaccine, had a much worse outcome when they caught the early versions of the coronavirus. So this is not COVID-19. But I thought it was interesting because since COVID-19 is from this family of coronaviruses, I wonder if it acts the same way as these other coronaviruses. And so might it be the case that they're going to find out that the people who are dying from COVID-19, maybe they all had the flu vaccine, or they all had the flu this year, or they all had other viruses like Epstein-Barr in their body already. That's what the guidance I got said, was that they all have some existing virus in their body. And so I just thought this study from 2019 was interesting because it suggests that the combination of coronavirus and influenza in the blood is really dangerous. Is that true for COVID-19? We don't know. I mean, the scientists don't know, I should say. We don't have scientific evidence of that. I also said in March, when this was first beginning, that the pandemic will last months and not weeks. And that's true, right? It's now May. In March, when people started first finding out about it, people didn't really realize it was going to last this long, and it looks like scientists are predicting that it's going to go on for several more months. Okay, in March, I also said that those most bullied are the biggest victims. And, we are seeing that. We are seeing oppressed populations, Native Americans, African Americans, Latinx people are dying at much larger numbers. Okay, another thing that I said back in March was that this coronavirus is far more contagious than people realize. And that you do not have to be coughed on or breathed on or whatever, or you don't even have to be next to a sick person to get sick. And back then, that's what people were saying, was that you essentially had to be within a certain number of feet or so of somebody coughing or sneezing. And so we have a number of studies that have come out now documenting how very contagious this is. And it's almost every other day another study is coming out telling us about yet another way that you can catch this condition. So we have the National Institutes of Health did a news release on Tuesday, March 17th, in which they found that the new coronavirus is stable for hours on surfaces. Now, everyone knows about this now, but you know, this information came out and it was a surprise to a lot of people. And this was based on a study done with the National Institutes of Health, the CDC, UCLA, and Princeton, and it was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. They found that severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2, was detectable in aerosols for up to 3 hours, up to 4 hours on copper, up to 24 hours on cardboard, and up to 2 or 3 days on plastic and stainless steel. In another study in Finland, they did a study where they were trying to figure out how far these droplets could travel when somebody coughed, and they did this simulation in a supermarket, and they found that somebody could cough in one aisle and it could travel 2 aisles over, infecting shoppers 2 aisles over in the grocery store. And they also found that it could stay in the air for a couple of hours and infect people who came to shop later. That was published on April 9th, 2020. And that was the Aalto University, the Finnish Meteorological Institute, VTT Technical Research Center of Finland, and the University of Helsinki who did that study. There was also a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that found that the coronavirus can be transmitted in urine, semen, and fecal matter. Let's see. There was also a study in Science Daily, which was originally published in the New England Journal of Medicine on March 20th, 2020, that found that the virus remains infectious on cardboard, metal, and plastic, and that could remain for several hours to days on multiple surfaces. We also have a study from the CDC Emerging Infectious Diseases Research Letter. And this is a preprint, so it's not peer-reviewed yet. It's scheduled to be published in July, in which they found that there was an outbreak in China associated with air conditioning in a restaurant, and from that they suspect that the virus can travel quite a bit further than they thought, possibly up to like 4 meters in an air-conditioned room. So there's just a lot of evidence coming out that this is an extremely contagious coronavirus, so I consider that evidence to support what I said. Now, on April 19th, 2020, I again spoke about the contagiousness of this condition, and I said that the coronavirus is very sticky and it can be transmitted without a host via personal belongings and in the rooms where sick people have been. So there is another study. This is a preprint coming out of MedRxiv, March 26, 2020. And the article is called Transmission Potential of SARS-CoV-2 in Viral Shedding Observed at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. And in this study, they found that 76.5% of all personal items sampled at the medical center were positive for SARS-CoV-2. Okay, so that definitely confirms what I said, is that the personal items of the people who are sick are all contaminated. And so here's a little cautionary note that MedRxiv always puts on their preprints. Preprints are preliminary reports of work that have not been certified by peer review. They should not be relied on to guide clinical practice or health-related behavior and should not be reported in news media as established information. All right, so some of the studies I'm citing, like this one, this is a preprint, which means it hasn't been peer-reviewed. So, you know, someone can peer-review it tomorrow and find that the study is lacking. But, you know, we have some preliminary information that suggests the information I got might be correct. Now, finally, on April 19th, I said that viruses can adapt to different populations, geographies, and can mutate extensively as it travels. There was an article in Science News which says, Mutations in SARS-CoV-2 Offer Insights into Virus Evolution. That's the title of the article. And it's coming out of the University College of London, and it was published on the same day in the Infection Genetics and Evolution Journal. And their summary was that by analyzing virus genomes from over 7,500 people infected with COVID-19, the research have characterized patterns of diversity of SARS-CoV-2 virus genome, offering clues to direct drugs and vaccine targets. The study identified close to 200 recurrent genetic mutations in the virus, highlighting how it may be adapting and evolving to its human hosts. Okay, so that suggests that indeed it is mutating and adapting to different environments. There's also another study that indicates the coronavirus has mutated into at least 30 different strains. This study was carried out by Professor Li Lanyuan and colleagues from Zhejiang University in Hangzhou, China, and published in a non-peer-reviewed paper released on the website MedRx IV. So again, that's a pre-peer-reviewed article, so we don't know yet, you know, if it's if it was well designed, but we certainly have a suggestion that it might be the case that this virus really is adapting. So that's my summary of the science that I have found that supports the information that I've received. And I'll continue to look and see whether or not the guidance I'm receiving is supported by the scientific studies that are being done. There are a lot of scientific studies being done. There are reports coming out every day. We probably won't know for several months definitively what the answer is to these questions. But I just thought it was interesting to do this review of what's out there to see, you know, are my guides accurate? Can the scientists actually demonstrate that the information my guides are giving me is correct? So thank you for listening. And remember to follow, subscribe to my podcast so that you can be informed of the next episode. This is your host, Dr. Jennifer Lisa Vest, and we've been listening to Rick Batters' album, Music from the Archangels. Thank you.